Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Craig Parkinson, and this is the Two Shot Podcast. Pop the kettle on and let's dive in. How the devil are you? Yes, it is Thursday and it's part two of our Edinburgh Festival Two Shot Podcast. And we kick things off this week. It was Saturday morning when I started recording this. And what you're going to hear, I got up, went for breakfast. I mean, you don't need to know all of this. What you do need to know is the first show I saw, I legged it all the way up to Summer Hall in Edinburgh. It's a brilliant venue to see the one and only Daniel Kitson. And what a way to kick off the day. I mean, any time of the day is fantastic when you're seeing Daniel Kitson, but this was exceptional. We were all in Summer Hall venue, which was the one outside, I forget what it's called. It's basically like a mini Big Top, really. And he came on stage it was all sold out. It was touch and go. They said, you know, the lovely, big shout out to the lovely staff at Summer Hall. They said, just wait there and we've got to get everybody in and we'll see if we can squeeze it in. Squeeze you in. Eventually they did, which was incredible because I adore Daniel Kitson. There's really no one like him. And I was going to tell you about the show, and I'm not going to because I really want you to go and see it, and it could spoil things. But just to say, he doesn't rest on his laurels, obviously. It's a wonderful show. I know he's touring the show, so do go and see him. Who else are you going to hear? You're going to hear from the wonderful Chloe Petz, the brilliant Rob Orton. Rob Orton has a show. It's the Rob Orton Show this year, and I know I think he's touring from March. Do go and see it. I saw that in the afternoon. It was emotional, funny, wonderful, just class, absolute class. I love Rob so much. I love his shows. It's beautiful and life-affirming, so do go and see the Rob Orton Show. Chloe Petz, as you'll hear, Chloe Petz is going to come back on. We're going to have a full TSP hour with her in a few weeks. I'm going to give her a bit of a rest after Edinburgh. You'll hear from Simon Brodkin. And what happened in the evening? Well, I had a jam-packed day of comedy. I legged it back to the hotel to turn myself around because I was going to be on stage as a guest for Martin Compston and Gordon Smart's Restless Natives live podcast at the Queen's Hall. It was everything and more you would expect. I was there with my friend Warren Brown, the lovely Owen Teal, Gordon's wife Kate, Tiana, Martin's wife, and about 800 raucous guests. And we'll end this with a lovely post live podcast show debrief with Martin and Gordon. So please do whatever you need to do. Enjoy this part two of the Two Shot Podcast at the Edinburgh Festival. Enjoy. I'll see you at the end. Good morning from the wonderful city of Edinburgh. It's day two of my Edinburgh Festival, and day one could not have got off to a better start. Bumping into people, seeing two cracking plays. The last time we spoke, I was with Laura Wilde, Kyle Faulkner, the originators of No Love Songs, which myself and Martin watched last night at the Traverse, and it was fantastic. And as exhausted as I was, we made it through. We crept to about 11 before we turned it in. Because I need to be fighting fit today. It's a big, long day. I've got lots to see and lots of people to talk to, hopefully. But before that, I need to go and find some breakfast. I'll see you in a bit.
Jemba used to need a big radio van.
Those are the days. Now I just carry this.
Yeah, brilliant.
This is what I love about the Edinburgh Festival. I get a call, I meet somebody, and then I meet somebody else, and now I'm meeting somebody else. We've escaped the frankly awful Scottish weather. And I'm here sat down with Simon Brocken. How are you, mate?
I'm good. We are indoors, but it doesn't feel like it. We have the pitter-pattering of the... We'd call it gentle in Edinburgh, but in the rest of the UK, this would be considered heavy to dangerous. But here, it's just a light shower, and we're in a nice little bar. And it's a pleasure to talk to you, mate.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, and we're cracking on with the festival. Now, it is the start of the festival, and you're here for the full run, correct?
Correct. I'm going in hard.
And it's not your first time, so how do you keep a healthy mind and a healthy body for the full run?
That's always the challenge, because frankly, 30 days or whatever, it's too long, it's silly, it's daft. If you're going to have a festival that long, at least have the decency of putting it in London, where everyone is. So, and there's previews at the beginning, which is just spurious, really. They're not previews. And then there's... And so it does... I get it. I get why Edinburgh wants to squeeze every last drop out of the festival, but it doesn't half take out the performers. And how do I keep a sound and sane mind? Well, I gave you a little insight just before we met, and you kindly didn't turn the microphone on while I was eating my Tupperware-carrying sweet potato and hummus and shoveling in, having done a little bit of exercise this morning to clear the mind. And it is hard because I'm up here. It is work, but it's also, it's lots of fun. There's lots of fun, funny, enjoyable, brilliant people hanging about.
Around the clock as well. It's so tempting. I mean, I turned it in last night at 11 on my first day,
yeah.
And I got up this morning at 8 because I knew I was seeing somebody at 10:30 over the other side. So your walking boots are on and you just got to dive into it. And you can't do that with a fuzzy mind. And I'm just going to see stuff and I'm talking to people, but you're on stage.
Yeah, and how many days are you here for?
I go home tomorrow.
Okay, so let's don't lecture me about timetables, please. Yeah, everyone's you start off and it's like head down. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna hit this early timetable. It's hard. Your brain needs a little break, that rhythm and routine. I mean, comedians, we're not exactly the most stable and steady of minds. So to ask to do exactly the same thing day in day out. Even though I'm sort of used to doing it on tour, but there you get a few days off and you're driving around and it's different theatres. Here it's the same venue, the same night. Fortunately, not the same people, although you want some returners. But yeah, it is hard and you occasionally succumb and end up going on a 97-hour binger and forgetting what you're meant to be doing and what country you're in. It happens.
We live and learn. You've talked about taking on the road with massive tour dates there. Is that lonely? It always strikes me as something that's quite a lonely, lonely job. Whereas here, I like to think that you're in a community of comedians. And is it as supportive as I think, or is that me being naive?
I think, is it lonely on tour? Mm. It's not. I mean, partly because I'm kind of talking to hundreds of people every night. And in my obviously fucked up head, they're all my friends, right? So I find that like quite that. It is supportive up here, and it is whatever you want it to be. I mean, there's so many hundreds of people and so many, many, many different types of artists, and all the agents are up and families up, and it is whatever you want it to be. But I think it is easy, especially early on. There was that woman who tweeted about one person coming to her show. Mm-hmm. And obviously that was a really cool thing to open up about and really great that it's had a positive spin. But lots of people are going through that. Yeah, maybe Jason Manford would like to speak to all of them as well.
Well, the thing is, I was walking around, and like last year when I was here, when the binmen were on strike, quite rightly, and the rubbish was everywhere, and it was hot and it was smelly. It's the end of the festival.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of ghosts walking around, people quite jaded. Whereas here, I'm at the start, and quite frankly, I'm overwhelmed by the amount of shows that are on the posters. I'm looking in all these books. I'm trying to see as much as I can. And then I was thinking about those actors, those comedians who don't have any profile whatsoever.
Mm.
That must be a huge, huge mountain to climb to get a handful of people to come to your show, because there's so much on offer. Obviously, it's changed for you over the years, and social media's been a big part of that for you. So are you getting new audience members to you? Are you getting a different generation that are picking up on back catalogue, new stuff?
I think, first of all, if people haven't been to The Fringe, the first time I came, I remember it's kind of just crazy. You think of a festival and you might think Glastonbury, or you might think of some literary festival where it's all organised, or Glastonbury, all these stages. What it is, it's like every room and not room, every shed, every bin, every telephone booth has a show running in it. And then there's posters everywhere and there's shows everywhere. And it's just this burst of I guess, creativity, to not want to sound too wanky about it. And I remember that actually the first time I came to Edinburgh was for The Fringe, and I was just like, what? This is just an assault on the senses. I was just getting into stand-up. It was like, wow. And then the second time I came was to do Edinburgh University, which was not during The Fringe, and it was like, what is this town? It was empty and devoid of poetry, and it was both times were really freaky. But yes, getting people into your show is a real, real challenge, and that's why when you go up the Royal Mile, which is kind of your, I don't know, what would you say, your Regent Street of Edinburgh,
absolutely,
it is carnage. I mean, it people pounding flyers and screaming and doing little bits of their play, and it is a bit of mentally it is a challenge. I mean, it really is. I you know, getting through every day, and especially when people aren't coming to your shows at the beginning, it is a bit of a rite of passage. I mean, that sounds a bit horrible, but you've got to. What is good on the flip side of that is things can quickly change. And I remember, I think Laura Solon, years and years ago, she was doing this tiny little room. Mm-hmm. And no people, and then suddenly word got out, review happened, then next review, she ended up winning the Perrier that year. And
that,
it just burst, and that can happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about the theatre side of things, but I imagine there's a parallel, critical mass going on there, and word of mouth, so it is possible to dig yourself out. But it is, and I'm lucky enough now, people are coming to a big room and filling it up, and it is a bit of a different experience for me. But obviously, we're all fragile, aren't we? Why wouldn't we be up there wanting likes and laughs every night if we weren't pitifully lacking in certain amount of self-belief? So every night there is you go up to 100, you want to fill that, you go up to 200, you want to be 250 is what I think I'm doing now, and there's are we going to get the last seats in? So we always manage to feel a bit shitty about ourselves.
You wouldn't be yourself, you wouldn't be an artist, you wouldn't be a comedian if you didn't, Simon. Speaking of the new show, can you tell me, obviously I don't want to go into it too much, I want it to remain a surprise for everybody who's going to come, just tell me, give me a little taster.
A little bit. I was thinking about this, I hate this question, not everyone asks this question, and it's so funny, isn't it, because I was thinking, imagine someone said I went to, I don't know, Michael McIntyre or whatever, and that, you wouldn't say, all right, what was it about? You'd be like, how funny was he? And it's weird how you come up to Edinburgh and I get it, but it's this interesting, first and foremost, I always want to be making people absolutely laugh like drains. Yeah, and of course there is a theme, because otherwise it wouldn't be a show unless it had that kind of narrative through it. I think it's there if people want to pick up on it, and if they just want to come along for a just and flat out giggle, then that's it's not like I'm not pushing it on them. The show's called Xavier, which is a little mysterious title on purpose. It's not a character that I'm doing. Obviously, I used to do the characters.
That's the thing. That's why I asked you about the show, and I don't ask everybody that, but because you're primarily known and you're famous for the characters in the past, going back right back to Lee Nelson, I'm just wondering if any of those people are coming back, or is this just a whole new show? Do you know what I mean?
It's totally straight stand-up. The Xavier is not a character. In answer to that question and a bit of what you're asking me in the question before, people come to me for all sorts of reasons. It's really cool. So some people will just be like, anyway, there's Chance on the show. He's got some good quotes. The Times said it's the funniest show they've seen last year and stars and yada yada. Then some people come because the stunts. They recognise, oh, he's the guy that threw the money over Sepp Blatter. Some will come because of the Lee Nelson and the Jason Bent stuff. And others just know me as a stand-up, which is what I've just been doing for a couple of years, and it's really cool. One of the things I'm actually most proud of is when I first changed from doing the characters into straight stuff, I was worried that people would be like, whoa, that's... what? That's not funny anymore. And obviously, I'm not going to please all the people all the time, neither do I want to, but I do... I think as artists, performers, creatives, darling, we overthink these things, and I think people want to sit down, come and enjoy themselves. And I think people come for all sorts of reasons. The show is, if I had to sort of hone it down to, it's about who's good, who's bad, who are we rewarding in society for being good and bad? You know, we've got bankers who, let's be honest, don't have a lot of skills and earn a silly amount of money. You know, they're like, yeah, I left school when I was 16, now make, you know, no qualifications, now make 5 million a year at Goldman Sachs because I have something you can't teach, no principles, right? So you've got that extreme, and then you've got, it's actually inspired a little bit by my wife, who's a teacher, and, you know, she gets paid, but let's be honest, with the salary and the train ticket, and the, it's basically voluntary work, right? But she does it because she loves it, and it's like weird how we sort of shit on those people in society. And then looking at the leaders, in, you know, with what we've had the recent run at the moment, which Matt Hancock is kind of emblematic of that just seemingly shitty person who has been rewarded for being shitty by going on I'm a Celebrity and making £500,000, and no doubt will have a great and lucrative career being a plonker on all sorts of TV shows. And then, you know, you've got at the other end the ambulance drivers, and the, who I don't completely praise. I have a, you know, because I'm always kind of taking the mick a little bit, and Martley saying, you know, come on, it's not that hard a job giving people a lift to hospital. Most of the time they're dead, you know, it's not like an Uber driver at the end, they rate you. But it's still looking and then analysing me and going, hang on, where am I in the scheme of things? And I want to do all these things, I want to be better to the environment, I want to shop local, you know, I want to read novels, but actually when it comes to it, I never seem to have the time for anything other than me. And and just, you know, we're all somewhere on this spectrum, aren't we, of good, bad, somewhere, you know. I just hope I'm better than Matt Hancock is kind of the main aim I've got in life at the moment.
Well, I've spent a small amount of time with you, and I think you are better than Matt Hancock. Simon, have a fantastic Fringe. All the best, my friend.
Thank you. Real pleasure to meet you.
I've ran from the rain on the cobbles of Edinburgh across town to come and have a quick chat with past CSP guest and lovely fan favourite, Mr. Rob Orton. How are you?
All right, Craigie, I'm well, are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for doing this. I'm just trying to, as people were here, I'm cobbling together lots of different interviews, little short bursts about what the Fringe is like. And I've said this to somebody else, and it happened yesterday. I'm quite overwhelmed with the amount that's on offer for me. And as an actor, I'm thinking about those actors, those comedians who are just starting out and don't have profile yet, and certainly not at this stage of the festival, which, you know, in the first few days, they can't have word of mouth because it's just impossible. Is it a supportive network?
I think it is a supportive network. I mean, a very recent example of this, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but there was a lady who was doing a show who'd worked really hard on her play called Sunset, mm-hmm. and put a picture of herself really upset on Twitter saying, one person came to my show today, and then Jason Manford did a video about it saying, don't worry, everyone's been through it, and it got like 45,000 likes, and then show sold out. So that is supportive, isn't it? But I think that with regard to people coming to the show, and I think it is supportive. Yeah, I think it's supportive for. It's got to be. I think you've got to be careful with your encouragement sometimes. I think with anything, if someone's doing something and you can see they're believing it, and you got to be like, yeah, come on, keep going. But then I don't know. Sometimes I think it is supportive. I think it is supportive, and it's great when people are encouraging.
But equally, it's important to know when to just stop or just have a little break.
Maybe I don't know. I mean, it is a complete boot camp. Boot camp. I think it is a complete boot camp, and I think it's a really good place to find yourself out. So you could come up here and think, okay, I'm going to do this. I think this is what I'm going to do. But it's quite an unforgiving place. And when I started doing it, I was doing a show all about the colour yellow in the Banshee Labyrinth. That is I think it's about 40 at a squeeze in this cave. And I was flying along the Royal Mile in a yellow paddling pool. And it was a real slog. But I thought, come on. And I wanted to do it, and I believed in it. Mm-hmm. And because I believed in it, if there was four or five people there, I still felt good about it, because it was like making someone a loaf of bread and you trying it yourself and going, oh, this tastes gorgeous. I really want other people to try this. I know it's not going to be to everyone's taste, but I'm sure that I've got something that someone might like, maybe not as much as me, but they might like. And I think that enthusiasm can be infectious. And that's like with anything, isn't it? If you try something or you do a gig and you're like, oh, that gave me a good feeling, you want to do it again. And I think that's why I've come up here, and then this is my 10th solo show, and we're downstairs in the basement above the venue where I'm going to do it, and it's kind of mad, but it never gets any easier. The goalposts just shift and you're like, okay, some people are coming, and the worries change, but I think complacency is a killer, isn't it?
Absolutely, for everything.
Yeah.
But with that, has your approach to the Fringe changed? You know, with the constant goalposts, do you feel, for want of a better word, fitter and ready for it? Because you know, after so many years, what it's going to be like in that final week.
I think this year I feel match fit, because I got to go and do the Melbourne Comedy Festival in March and April. That was a gig every night for a month. And that was like, now you just kind of build up the muscles to be able to look at audiences and be less fearful. If I'm a bit rusty, then people can see it. Whereas, you know, it's just like anything. It's like doing press-ups, isn't it? Mm. If you keep doing them, it gets easier, and it's just... but I don't know. I don't think... I mean, I said the goalposts have changed, but the goal is to always make something good that I'm proud of and come away from it and think, yeah, I made myself feel something then. And if I made myself feel it, then hopefully I've got half a chance of someone in the audience feeling it as well. But if I'm in there and I'm not feeling it, and something's happened in the show, I glanced at someone and they were just looking at their phone, and they might have just been checking that it was off, you know, and then that gets into my head. It's just, and I think that's when people say good luck. And like, I do believe in luck, because you could look at someone and they could just be, it was just a moment when they were looking at you and smiling, and they might be thinking about something completely different, you know, of like a moment in the show that they saw before you. And then you're like, oh, they seem to be enjoying it. And then that gives you the momentum. And so it's like, it's just a complete storm of everything coming at you. And you've just got to try to do your best to keep the metal and the belief to go, I've put this show through a sieve and trying to get rid of all the crap lines. And who knows if I've done that, but the only person who knows that really is... The only person who knows what I want to say is me, really.
Mm. And how it's interpreted by the audience is out of your control, isn't
it? I think it completely is. I think as well, That's something about being a human, is that your energy just changes from day to day. Whether I remember I was doing a show up here and I was doing exactly what I've been doing and there was just like zero response from the audience. And I said to some of the other people who were doing shows, it was like such a weird show today. It was just like everyone wasn't there. And then someone said, well, it was a full moon. And I was like, what? And they said, that does make a bit of a difference. And then I was speaking to teachers and they were saying that all the kids go mad on a full moon. Not always, all the time.
No, I know what you mean.
But it's like, it does. It must have an effect. Yeah. I'm not a kind of that much of a hippie. I am a bit hippy-dippy, but I'm not saying I had a bad show because of the moon. Do you know what I mean?
No, but also, we have... I'm not either. But when those happen, things like that happen, I don't have great sleeps.
No.
And that has a knock-on effect.
Well, there's an energy.
For the next day, isn't there?
Isn't there?
Yeah.
There is an energy that we're not in control of. Mm. And that's just... Sorry to interrupt that.
No.
That just... There's an energy that we're out of control of, and it's just like... You can think, like, if you're getting on set and you're going, oh, I've learned my life, da-da-da-da-da, and then something within you might just change. But then I guess that the more I've done this, the more... I guess it tried to become a professional of if something is pissing me off, maybe 5 years ago, I would have stopped the show and gone and said, what are you doing? Whereas now I've drilled it into myself that nobody else can see them, really. Unless it's like someone in the third row and looking on the phone
well,
and everyone's just...
Or,
yeah, and I mean, that's it. It's just people... Throughout this fringe, right, I know that I'll probably, fingers crossed, I'll have one or maybe two shows where I come away from it and I go, that was like a completely clean run of the audience were great, I felt great, and I didn't fumble one word. And I got every punchline exactly right. Because you only need to mispronounce something and the laugh is like, half or quarter. Mm. It's the delivery of the line, isn't it? You know that.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, if you mumble it or something like that, it just doesn't have any power. Like, I was saying a thing about Listerine in one of my preview shows, and I said Listerine, and they were just like, nah, it's gone. And I was like, well, that's normally a good injection of laughter at the start of the show. Mm. And I'm like, right, okay, that's gone. So then then you've just got to deal with it and kind of move on. So when I'm saying that, hopefully I'll have one or two, it's like hopefully others will be good, but I'm always striving for that, the perfection. Mm. And I think you've got to do that, but that does come at a cost because it means that I really beat myself up after pretty much every time, unless I want it to go as... But I think it's good to have high standards. You've got to.
I think it is, and if you walk away, and I don't know, not being a stand-up comedian, but I know about walking away from a scene, or we've finished a scene, and it's out of my control, and it's not quite what I wanted. But then again, I know that there's another time I can go back, and I can go back, not to that moment, but I can go back to that scene or that piece and try and get it better. But if you're constant... But what I'm saying is I would worry... If I walked away, as I worry with other actors, actually, or sometimes very rarely work with, but that do things like this, and they go, that's it. That's the best it could possibly be. And some would say something crude, like, I've smashed that, I've smashed it. It's like, well, no.
Yeah.
Well, then does it stop? Does it end?
Yeah. No, exactly. Where do you go from there?
Well, you've hit the peak. If you think you've hit the peak, then you might as well just pack it all in.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's always, like, finding... Like yesterday, I was watching someone's show and I had an idea for a new line in my show. And I thought, oh, brilliant, I wish I had that today, but I didn't. And then it's just that thing of just building it. And I know that this show will be completely different by the end of The Fringe compared to what it is. I mean, the bones of it will still be there, but I'll have figured out when to move my head. And I've done a lot of work in progress, so I've figured out most of it. But
it is constantly evolving.
Absolutely, just through trial and error.
Yeah.
Because you go in... Oh, they seem to really react when I widened my eyes a bit there. Or, like, I did this thing with my hand. Oh, I'll do that again. Like, I remember I was doing a show last time and I was doing this thing about everyone working as a team in the supermarket, like people cheering each other on, like people doing sport, but, like, with the self-service checkout. So saying, go on, you can do it. And then I kind of cupped my mouth, like, on the front of that, like, Franz Ferdinand album cover, whatever, where it's like, go on. And... The reaction was just It just doubled. And, like, so that's why it's kind of difficult as well, because a lot of reviews come right at the start. So you've got to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, I'm just kind of trying to figure it out. So basically, hopefully, by the time I go on tour in March, I'll have put it through the doing it 26 every time a day, doing it 26 times a day, and going through it in the morning and then listening to the recording on the night. So then it's fully there, but I tried to get it fully there because people are paying for tickets. It's just like, but yeah, it's interesting. And I think it's the whole thing about the show is about being here for the human experience. And that is, that's what I just tell myself of, like, right, okay, I've eaten something that doesn't agree with me sometime. And then you've got to kind of shake your way through the show.
Yeah.
And then just try to, right, don't eat that again, or it's full on. But everyone has this, don't they? It's not just performers. It's like everyone going to work and just trying to try our best in whatever we do. Mm-hmm. And but then the pressure of that, of going, I want to try. It's like, why? Because that's what we get told that we're meant to be doing. You know, all these motivational videos. You get back up when you get smacked. It's like, what? Like, I've just been smacked in the face. No one should be smacking me in the face anyway. But then, you're like, okay, well, I'm striving. And then when you find out that someone like Tyson Fury, when he got all his goals, that was the most depressed he'd ever been.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I remember that interview with Robin Williams when he was saying, Mark Maron said to him about the Oscar, like, what about when you won the Oscar? Didn't that, like, make you happy? And he's like, well, man, that goes in about 5 or 10 days, like, the buzz of it. It's crazy. So I guess I've written on post-it notes and things like that of the effort is everything. The effort is all. Like, you know, when you're, like, learning lines or going through a script or turning up to a new set and trying to be good and nice to people and just, like, trying your best and just the effort of getting up and going, that's it. And, like, the result is kind of out of our hands, isn't it? And, like, the process of coming up with a new idea or figuring out how to grab someone by the scruff of the neck in a scene or something and go, oh, come on, yes, I knew I had it in me to do something good. And that's just it. And, like, I think that's it. It's like knowing, I feel lucky that I've gone through, like, I used to work in advertising and I thought, oh, that's almost right for me, but it wasn't, and something was not quite clicking, and then I did a poetry gig, and I thought, oh, that feels better, and then I started doing it, and it's just about trying to carve out that line for yourself, but yeah, it's difficult, and yeah.
It's constant navigation. Rob, it's always a joy to speak to you.
You too.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing the show this afternoon, and it's on at the Assembly, Roxy, 2:25,
yeah.
7 days a week.
Every day, till
every day.
26, yeah.
Brilliant. All the best for the friend, mate.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, at least it wasn't
right on those people.
At least it wasn't on our head.
Yeah, like, they used to be sort of really, like, DIY, and that was the charm of podcasts for me. And now I feel like we've gone round in a circle, and I feel like being able to, like, hear the atmosphere and environment that a podcast is recorded in is really nice.
I think people need that, because the reason I love it so much is it because it's about human connection. You know, I've just been to see Rob Orton's show, which is all about that, and he's very much about that as a person.
Yeah.
And sometimes if podcasts are in a shiny sort of studio setting, it's all a little bit polished.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I love it when it's, like, a bit rough and ready. And you've mentioned Rob Orton now, and that's, like, my that will get me going, because I'm famously obsessed with Rob Orton.
I was on the phone, because I know Rob a little bit, because we did a much longer podcast together last year, and kind of fell in love with him a little bit.
He's just fucking incredible.
You can swear. It's fine, don't worry.
Thank you. He's just amazing, because, like, we spent the whole month in Melbourne together, and he almost, like, he's that much of a fantastic person. He almost, like, changed my whole perspective on everything.
I totally understand. That's what I was saying to my friend on the phone. Like, 10 or 15 minutes in Rob's company makes me think and feel in a different way.
And it's even just when he's like, he'll just be walking around and you'll just be like talking in your own head, whatever. And then he'll stop and go, that's a good tree, that. And then you'll just all look at a tree together for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it is a good tree. I noticed. Thanks for pointing that out.
It's a really good tree. And he just makes you sort of stop and just be really grateful for like the bit that you've got, you know? And he's never like, I think I'm very pessimistic about the fact that like one day this cool thing that we get to do will be over. Whereas he's like, that's what makes it beautiful.
I mean, he's the complete optimist.
Yeah. But it's funny because, well, maybe this is, it will have come out in your podcast. Maybe this is oversharing. I feel like he's such an optimist for everyone but himself. And I wish he'd like, I wish he could see how wonderful he is.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah. I should say, Chloe, how are you? How is it all going? I know we've just been, it's not about anybody else, it's about you. But
you have to understand, every promo I've done for the Edinburgh Fringe, everyone's been like, how are you? I'm like, let's talk Rob Orton.
But you know, that's when because usually I talk to a lot of creative people, but mainly it started out with actors because I never get the chance really to have like an hour with an actor when I'm at work because it's just like a little pocket of time. Oh right, camera's up, lighting's ready, let's go. You never really get to know people, so it's quite surface level conversation. And doing this over the last 5 years, just that deep connection, we don't get that time, especially when the focus for an hour or so, you know, is like turned on yourself, turned on somebody else, and it's all about that. It doesn't really happen that much anymore.
No, but it says a lot about the society that we've created, that to hang out with people you want to hang out with, we have to sort of turn it into a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, on a completely selfish level, that's exactly why I do this podcast. I get to the age of 47 and go, I've got enough friends, and then you know, you sit down with someone like Rob or yourself and you go, oh actually we could hang out and go and have a drink and really enjoy each other's company.
And you'll have to like siphon off some of your old friends to put me and Rob into the rotation.
What I long to do at the end of every year, I don't
a
really
cull.
Like a cull. Exactly. Chloe,
friendship
we
cull.
Are on the same page already. Is get the phone out just around midnight, maybe just before.
Yeah.
And just go through it. See who hasn't made the list.
Yeah.
And they go.
And would it be they go with no explanation, or are you doing sort of like a review? Like
I think a review would have to happen prior to the red delete.
So you put them on like
a shortlist,
a probation. So around October, you're sitting them down. Well, maybe you could have your definites that you're keeping, then your definites that you're not, and they're just gone. Mm-hmm. And then the ones that you're unsure about around October, you sit them down and you go, look, if you'd like to maintain this friendship, then I'm going to need you to...
But I don't think we should do that. I think it's up to the other person, because there's only so much... If you're constantly bringing the vol-au-vents to the party, right?
Oh, so you want them to know before you've told them?
I think it has... They should know.
You'd like them to read your mind?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think that is fair.
Is it too much to ask?
I don't think so.
I don't... Well, brilliant.
So, who would you get rid of? Name a name.
I think that's a much longer podcast.
Tony.
Don't know a Tony.
Okay.
There is a Tony in my phone, but it's a work thing. I've got lots of work things on my phone. Anyway, just enough of that. It's the start of the Fringe. Is it foolish of me to ask how it's going so far?
I don't think so. I think it's the only question we really can ask at this point. And
I've got loads more, don't I?
Really?
Got loads more questions.
Can I have some of them? Because I feel like I don't know how to interact with strangers at the moment without talking about... Maybe I should just like be like, watch any of the Women's World Cup?
Do you know what we should do? Don't talk... the thing is, I knew football was going to come up. I fucking knew it. And you're Crystal Palace, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm Palace.
I don't know anything about
football.
And that's
football, okay, Chloe, you don't have
and
to.
And I have zero passion as well. I would make sure we can't really talk about that.
But you know loads about women, don't you?
Yeah.
So you know about 50% of the Women's World Cup?
This is true. In fact, I've had the ex-England goalkeeper on my podcast.
Rachel Finnis-Brown?
Karen.
Karen Bardsley. She's great.
She is amazing. So we met a few years ago in Manchester where I used to live. And then I went, Karen, you're fucking great. You should come up.
She's so good.
She's so good. She's so interesting.
We did something together for the Women's Euros last year.
Yeah.
And I was like really starstruck. Because, like, you know, in this line of work, you get used to walking into a room, seeing a famous person and having to be like really cool about it. Whereas when it's footballers, I have no chill. And everyone will be, like, all of my mates would be like, who's Karen Bardsley? And I'd be like, who's Karen Bardsley?
Yeah.
I've gone bright red and started shaking in front of her. It's Karen Bardsley. Because, yeah, she was like the person I admired when I was growing up. And she lived up to all expectations.
Oh, she's fantastic. But I'm the same, but with chefs.
Really?
Like, not with actors at all.
Like, if Tom Kerridge walked past, you'd turn into sort of a...
No, I'm a
tiny little boy.
I suppose a little bit I would, but the slightly more the non-TV chefs.
Right.
You know, the faces that you don't see on TV all the time, because television chefs now, it's turned into something else.
Okay, so like, they're like personalities.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit like when stand-up comedians became rock stars. You know, but you're far too young to remember when they did the Mary Whitehouse Experience, like at Wembley. I think it was, you know, it's a big, huge thing. But yeah, with chefs, I think the chefs are like rock and roll stars for me. I just get a little bit giddy.
But I think what will happen with the changing tide of the chefs is what has happened with stand-up, where I feel like me and my mates have kind of capitalised on the fact that comedy used to be for outsiders and nerds.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's like a rock and roll thing now, it feels like there's... All my mates are just like so cool, and you're just like, you're not allowed to be cool and funny.
That's horrible.
Yeah, isn't it?
And nice.
Yeah, cool, funny, and nice. This isn't right. We should be like horrid little weirdos that were rejected when we were teenagers. That's what we should be.
But we can be horrible little weirdos that were rejected and still be nice, because we probably were horrible little weirdos, and we're probably still facing rejection anyway. I mean, I know I am with what I do for a living, and you go out there every night, and there's a gamble. Because you've got hundreds of people in front of you.
It really feels like there's a gamble in Edinburgh specifically as well. Like, because we've been saying this a lot, that when you go on tour, when someone like books to see your gig, that's their night out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really excited. Mm-hmm. And you've like signed up to this sort of like social contract of like, I'm going to bring everything I've got for you.
Because you've booked the babysitter, you've saved up, you've bought a ticket, and I'm coming to see you. That's a choice.
Yeah.
I'm making that choice.
But then that makes them make the choice of, I want to be here for you and have a really good night as well. And it creates this sort of, like, fun chemistry. Whereas in Edinburgh, people are just tired and you're just an hour in their day. And that can make it a little bit more challenging. But I'm trying to, like, bring as much of that energy to the fringe as possible and go, like, OK, all we've got together is an hour, let's make it,
let's make the most of it
special and fun.
Speaking of that, about bringing it and about when people buy a ticket for your show, like, when you're on tour, as opposed to here, because there's jeopardy, what's... Do you change your energy when you're supporting? Like, say when you've been supporting Ed Gamble recently... They haven't bought a ticket to you, have they? They've bought a ticket to Ed.
Yeah.
So do you approach that in a different way?
I approach it in a way where I feel like the pressure is off slightly now. Particularly now I know Ed, because I know that if I went and ate shit for 25 minutes, he wouldn't care. He'd just find it so funny. it would be his favourite gig if I just went and died on my arse. But I think the pressure's off because, like, they're not there for me. And it's almost like it always, particularly like when we did the big gigs last year, like Apollo, I felt so excited because it simultaneously felt like a special day for me because it was like a big landmark in my career. But it also felt like I was going to my mate's party and was there supporting him and there. So, like, you kind of, your ego goes out the window and you're just like, I'm at this amazing party.
You can get to enjoy it as well.
But I get to do a speech at the party.
Wow.
So I like, I enjoy the party, but I also get the cool thing of being a part of it. So I don't know. I find, like, particularly the second leg of Ed's tour when I knew what I was doing, it kind of felt like a holiday because all I had to do was 25 minutes a day and then just hang out with my mates, like Ed and Paul, the tour manager. So, yeah, I'm probably at my best at those gigs because I just feel like so free and...
That's your happy. Job.
It's my job, isn't it?
You do that for... I mean, what a buzz.
I'll tell you, the feeling when I walked out the Apollo was, like, maybe the best feeling I've ever felt in my life. because I wasn't even shitting it all day. I was nervous. Mm. But my birthday was the day after. The day of the Apollo felt more like my birthday. Because you know when it's your birthday and it's just always in the back of your mind, like, it's my birthday today. Yeah. It was always in the back of my mind, it's Apollo today. And I was nervous and I was so worried that when I walked out, my nerves were going to make me not make the most of it. And as soon as I walked out and as soon as I saw the crowd, I just felt so relaxed and just so present. And so in the moment, I was like, this is going to be fine. This is what we've trained for. This is going to be really fun.
What a lovely feeling. Because you know when you get that awful bit of direction sometimes, I know I certainly have, especially like in voiceovers, just relax and have a bit of fun with it. Fuck off.
You try having a bit of fun.
You have fucking fun with it. You have fun selling a toilet. But that's it. You can relax and have just what you described. You can relax into it, but still keep that energy up.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Chloe, you mentioned before about being in Montreal for...
Melbourne.
Yeah.
That's okay. Melbourne. We all make mistakes. But you're just going to be on my cull list at the end of the year.
So I've got a great producer going to edit that out easily. I won't look stupid. But that's a festival. You, as a comedian, you go to lots of festivals, right? Mm-hmm. What makes Edinburgh different? It feels different to any other festival that I've been to.
I think it's probably to do with, like, the scale, the fact that all of your mates are here, the fact that you can, at any hour of the day, pretty much see something, and it will always be interesting, and it will always be, like, the absolute fruit of someone's hard work. Even if it's shit, you know that person has probably put loads and loads of work into it.
I've thought that before because I I felt quite overwhelmed. I don't know why I felt overwhelmed this year, because I didn't feel it last year, but I was with my partner last year here just for the end of the festival as opposed to the beginning. Mm-hmm. But seeing all the posters, you know, let me walk up to the Pleasance, they're just everywhere all the time, everywhere. Toilets, mm-hmm. flyers, and people have put that effort in. And if they haven't got any sort of profile at the beginning, fuck me, they're not going to have anybody. And then hopefully that word of mouth comes, but they've got to have that belief. Mm. It's probably the hardest thing in the world. I've got so much admiration for everybody that comes up. And
yeah, but I also think it is like you can adjust your expectations to get out of it. You get out of it what... Like, you can set your own expectation for yourself, right? Mm. And one of my expectations is, whatever happens, I know that I will have gigged a new show 27 days in a row, and by the end of that, I will be so much of a better comedian. And hopefully, along with all of that, loads of people will have come see it, loads of people have enjoyed it, and it will progress my career. But if I get nothing else, I know that I'll be better for it, and I'll be able to come out of a really difficult marathon month proud.
Yeah.
And I hope that... That's what everyone can feel at the Fringe.
Chloe, this has been lovely. I don't want to put you on the spot, but would you come back on this podcast and we can do a proper, like, hour and we can really get to know each other and I can find out everything about you?
That it would be an absolute honour.
I would love that. I have a feeling it would be a breeze and a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Please.
Brilliant.
Chloe,
have a brilliant festival.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate it. And you.
And that was the fantastic Chloe Pets. I don't normally do that. I never really ask people if they'll come on the podcast for a bit longer. Well, because I've never really done this before. It's just like little pockets of conversation. But when it clicks. And I think you'll agree, Chloe is going to make a fantastic guest. And, she's up here at the festival all month. Go see her. What I'm going to do at the end... is because we've spoken to quite a few people and we're off to go and speak to some more now. In the intro, I'll put on who I've spoken to and where they're playing here in Edinburgh. I tell you what, I am getting my steps in. I've managed to miss the rain, which is fantastic. But I'm just... on Shanks' pony, I am traipsing across town to go to the Pleasance Courtyard and go and have a little chat with Luke Kempner, who I believe you will remember, the lovely Suze Kempner, was on the podcast a few years ago. And I think I've kind of run out of time about who I can see. I've seen two shows today. I was up very, very early. And I walked all over town to Summer Hall, which is a fantastic venue, to see the always... Well, they're always brilliant, but it's like I was saying to a friend of mine today, you can't... I'm talking about Daniel Kitson, sorry. You can't really say, or Daniel Kitson is the best, because you can't really put him in a category, because he's not like other storytellers or playwrights or comedians, and he is funny. Is he stand-up? I don't know. I mean, he has been, obviously. Anyway, that was remarkable. I managed to... Well, the Summer Hall staff were very, very sweet and kind. It was a sold-out show, and they managed to squeeze me in. And, yes, I did pay. And then I was already booked to go and see the wonderful Rob Orton. And it was a very touching, moving, funny show. And as myself and Chloe briefly mentioned... on the last little snippet, Rob gives you something. He gives you a different sort of outlook on things. So yeah, both of those shows, I mean, they're pretty much sold out. If you can get a ticket, then obviously do go, and your life will be richer, I promise you. Right, let's go to the Pleasance Courtyard, because I need to eat some food. The one thing I haven't had time to do today is eat food. And then tonight's escapades. Well, I will tell you more about exactly what I'm doing tonight later on. I'll see you in a bit. Oh, the quiet. Martin Compston, Gordon Smart, my friends, we have just... I say we. It is a collective we. We've just completed the first Restless Native podcast live in Edinburgh. Lads, I can't take this picture for the podcast, but how are you feeling right now?
Craig, you're part of that amazing moment. I can't believe my voice is going as well. It was amazing. And what was the line about Blackpool Witherspoons? You got your one in there, didn't you? It was a beauty.
I have to get it in.
You were amazing as well. What a great laugh. It just felt like a bunch of lads, a bunch of friends.
Like, I'll just say from the off, like... Because I get him so much stick. I love him dearly. He's one of my best pals. But he writes all this. For all the second game, he actually is the one who keeps it. Like, you go, this is the next one, this is the next one, this next one, this is the set list. And it's quite... I feel like shit because I gave him that much of a hard time, which I do, because I'm like, you overwrite shit and you're thinking, but see when you're up there and you're reading that stage, you're going, fucking hell, this is really good. And it goes to this, and it goes to this, and it goes to this. Like, it's... For us as a podcast, it's like it's me being a wee wido reacting, but he runs it, and it's lovely to see what he does in terms of when you see that reaction, and it's just going right. Then it's the sexy pirate. Then it's fucking that. It's this and this, and it, but it's him. It links it all, and I just want to say, like, I love you, man, and just fucking well done, because it's that. This is a thing is both of us, but it's his idea was this whole live show. He's the one who writes it all, and that's...
Yeah, but Gordon, you know it is a different beast recording a podcast together. I've been on your podcast, Martin's been on mine twice, we're all friends.
What podcast are you doing again?
I don't know, look up British podcast. Just look up award-winning podcasts, I'm sure it'll come up. But it's a different beast when there are... I mean, how many hundred people were there? 800 people there tonight. Yeah. Absolutely having it. They wanted it. So you have to... It can't be as intimate. We've got to throw it out there, which we did. And some more than others. if you were there, all I'm saying is two words. Owen Teal.
Do you know what, Craig? For me, it's really intimidating because you're all brilliant at this stuff. You're great on stage. You know what you're doing. And I just don't want to let myself down around you because... I hold you all in such high esteem, and it is special when you turn up and throw yourself into it and don't really care about what anybody thinks. You're just having fun with your mates, and it's really touching as well to see who turns up for Martin and actually turns up for us, because it's not just an interview on the radio, or, you know, when you have to give it the spiel, we're having a laugh.
But the thing with that is as well, so for people who listen to your podcast, who don't listen to our podcast, God damn you, the rest of Natives Live, something that's became a bit of a cult hit was I wrote a thing. Me and my lovely wife, Tiana, went on a diet for 30 days where we drank nothing but water and ate only pure shit. And it's the highest I've ever been in my life, just on pure fucking life. But I wrote this thing about squirrels called Nuts High, right? And it became a cult hit. And the thing is, I remember sending...
I mean you say cult hits,
no,
like you're fucking David Lynch.
No,
Twin Peaks, it is not.
Right. On the podcast, it became a cult hit.
Okay.
But I remember sending it to my agent going, like, I'm fucking on. Like, because I remember I used to walk the dog every day by this high school, and fucking the bells would go and the squirrels would run up the street, and I went, maybe there's a fucking squirrel high school in the trees. And I sent it to my fucking managers, and they went, and they called me and went, are you fucking high? And I went, I've never been so sober. So I wrote this thing, right? I wrote this thing, and then I went, and I put it on the show, and everybody loved it. And then I went, you know what, I'm going to write like a little play for this for the live show. But the difference is, and this really is, and I'm not fucking blowing up hanging, but the thing is, when you write this shitey little, like, two-page thing, and then you go, forgive me for this, first off, Comston, Parkinson, Warren Brown, Owen Teal. All of a sudden, you've got a fucking all-star BBC One cast, right, for my little fucking thing. And I start this fucking thing on a podcast, and I'm sitting there in my squirrel costume going, this could go bad. And then Owen walks out and goes, Mr. Mammoth? And you just go, we're in. It's just, we're in. He starts doing voices. You're like, because obviously that's what fucking actors do. We do stuff that's, when it's on the page, it just goes, which people don't see, they go, all right, that's quite thingy. But then they do something different. Then you came on and started doing some wild voice I never heard. Warren comes on as Jason Statham. And it's just like, I was in tears going like, this is fucking amazing.
So imagine how weird that is for Martin Comston. How do you think the civilian feels standing watching on the side? I had this epiphany on Friday afternoon when I went down with Martin to the rig to go on set. Yeah. And I actually had a little moment where I thought, fucking hell, he's a really, really big actor and a really big star. And tomorrow, I'm asking him to pretend to be a flying squirrel, dress as a sexy pirate, and to bring his actor, his award-winning BBC One primetime drama superstar friends to our carry-on in a room full of leathered Scottish people. This is, this could be quite risky.
But Gordon described it the best to me, because I was really worried about it. Gordon went, wee man, it's a best man speech.
Yeah,
they all want you to do well. Now, if they fuck it up, they're going to give you it tight. Mm, yeah. They're going to be on you. But everybody in that room is rooting for you, and that really. When I thought about it like that, I'm like, he's fucking right. And as well, he wrote out these notes, a lot of fucking notes. But we, after we did the rehearsal, we ended on the last page, and then so that's where I left it on my stand, and then so when I walked out of the start, it was on the last page. So after like one page, I was like, oh fuck, I don't know where we are. He started asking me questions, and I had to lean over and try to like casually flick it back about 20
smooth
pages.
Very smooth.
Smooth.
But he's right. Gordon's so fucking professional at this stuff. He was like, just nail the start, yeah, which he did. Nail the start was him, and he says, we're in. And he's right. We just fucking, you had the crowd on side and we're gone.
But the thing is, the crowd were on side before you even started. Because I've been interviewing a lot of comedians.
All of it.
All right.
All of it.
You're joking.
All of it's gone.
Drinks on us, bitches.
So when a comedian supports a stand-up comedian on their tour, that's the hardest job, because they've bought a ticket for Ricky Gervais. They haven't bought a ticket for Josh Pugh. They bought a ticket for Ed Gamble. They haven't bought a ticket for Chloe Petz. You know what I mean? But here, everybody bought a ticket for you. They didn't know.
Nobody knew you were coming tonight.
Nobody knew that we were coming.
I love that you're asking these questions as if you weren't Professor Acorn. You were in the fucking show. You're just guilty as anybody.
I've been working on the acorn all day. I'm trying to perfect... The acorn is very much... I know.
When you started doing it, and you started going, oh, acorn! I was like, oh my God, this is fucking brilliant. Wow. because that's what, yeah, when you get good fucking actors on, they enjoy it.
But the thing is, regardless of that, this has been friends supporting friends. And I know that me, Warren and Owen are like totally proud of you, and we would be there like a heartbeat, you know, to support you. So we're really, really proud.
Can we also add, because we know it's a privilege for us to be out there in the film festival.
What were you going to say, Martin?
We know it's a privilege to be at the Edinburgh Festival. It really is, right? We never expected to be at this, but we are, throughout this month, we're going to see a ton of shows.
Yep.
Like we saw last night, No Love Songs. And we're going to go. Wow. So please, like, we feel like, you don't feel like, for the purist, we're not hijacking this. Like, we're just chuffed to be a part of it, and we're going to promote as many people during it, whether it be comedian, new plays in.
Correct.
Because that's what the festival is all about.
That's what the podcast is about as well. Yeah. Right? Be resourceful, exactly. Be a rascal, get on and do it yourself.
Exactly, exactly. And you're doing that.
Yeah.
Guys, you've got one more show, 26th of September. This is coming out before then. I've no doubt it'll be a sellout. I'm sorry, I cannot come to reprise.
What was Professor Acorn doing?
He is filming a drama series in
Why
Brighton.
Is he doing Edinburgh?
I do not know. Tis a workshop.
It's a workshop.
And the nuts pass through the jungle.
Can I say I've acted with Craig Parkinson and Martin Compton?
No, you can't. No. We wrote you.
No, absolutely not. Guys, I love you so much. Congratulations.
Craig, love you. Love you, love you, love you, love you, love you.
And another episode is done. I really, really hope you enjoyed that. It was really fantastic just going up to the festival, not really knowing who I was going to talk to. So it was really exciting. I loved walking around. I love stomping around the streets of Edinburgh, talking to you. And we're going to try and put something in place for next year's Edinburgh Festival. Myself and Griff are going to have a house meeting about that. And hopefully we'll talk about that to you when we've got something set in stone. But until then, have a lovely week. And we'll back. Normal service will resume next week because we're going to be chatting to the fantastic actor Amy Kelly. So until then, I've been Craig Parkinson, not stomping around the streets of Edinburgh, and he's been producer Griff, putting his magic touch on making this two-part special something quite special. Thanks so much for downloading and subscribing. Messages on Instagram, we're on the X, Twitter, I don't know what to call it anymore. We're on there, we're on the Facebook. You can email twoshotpod@gmail.com. Do rate and review. It really helps. You know it does. Until then, take care. We'll see you next week.
The Two Shot Podcast was presented by me, Craig Parkinson. Recorded and produced by Thomas Griffin for Splicing Block. The remix of our theme tune is by Stolen Velour. Cheers. Out of the fire.